because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. J.R., he said when he took the job, I only want to hold it for 3 months. He held it for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Reed Hall announced this week he's going to be retiring as the CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Am I asking the wrong question? Is the surprise that he held it that long? Oh,
good question. Well, what's interesting is that, you know, they tried to kind of clean up, if you will, of the agency 3 years ago. Remember, even before that, Ryan Murray was brought in trying to have a pair of eyes, if you will, from the governor's staff on what was going on over there.
Right.
It hasn't quite cleaned everything up. Problems have persisted. Now, part of it is the foundation was never strong for this thing. I mean, even Walker's people tell you that we made a mistake by going from zero to 60,
yes,
going from commerce to WEDIC, and there wasn't a foundation in place, which was why this budget, when they tried to merge those several agencies, they kind of took a longer view, if you will.
Longer lens.
A lesson
tried
learned
to.
From this.
Yeah.
But they've still dealing with problems. They will tell you, hey, some of the stuff is from commerce, back from the Doyle days we're still dealing with, these bad loans.
Right.
But it's never quite gotten cleaned up. And it's, you know, it's a giant task. Now, Peter Barca, the Assembly Minority Leader, who's also on the WEDIC board, is saying, hey, now that, you know, thank you for your work, Mr. Hall, but now that you're gone, we need to find somebody who's got real credentials in terms of economic development. You know, Barker can speak some authority on that. He had a bit job with the feds way back in the day in this area.
Yeah, it was with the SBA.
Yep. But, you know, Hall's background was more of a manager, executive from Marshfield Clinic. He wasn't somebody who gone out and done economic development. So that's the question. What profile do you need in this job going forward to fix it? Do you need a manager, or do you need some, who can, a cleaner, if you will, or somebody who's going to be a big vision economic development guy or gal to lead the agency going forward?
Let's take a look at one of the statements that Reed Hall made when he announced his resignation. Together, we have increased transparency and accountability of WEDIC's operations. We have put in place checks and balances, enhanced financial tracking, and expanded the information that we provide to the WEDIC board, the Wisconsin legislature, and the public. WEDIC's programs have helped the Wisconsin economy to grow. JR, did the initial missteps, they came under former Green Bay Mayor Paul Jaden, who was the first leader of WEDIC. So did Reed Hall then, is he really responsible for these major missteps that are disclosed in the audit, or did he not do cleanup very well on some of these major problems?
You know, an excellent question of like, it's hard to say because, you know, these problems were there before. You know, there's a lot of finger pointing going on. You can go around and ask people who work for the agency and work in the governor's office, and they will all have somebody else to blame, if you will, about this. Some people say Jaden wasn't a very good leader. Some say it wasn't a direction from the gut. It goes on and on and on. The bottom line is they have not gotten this stuff right yet. And oh, by the way, this is going to be an issue for Scott Walker in the presidential campaign. You've already seen Jeb Bush kind of cue it up a little bit. You saw a little sneak preview, if you will, of the attacks he may lob at Scott Walker. But this is going to be an issue for him. You'll hear the words like crony capitalism.
And Donald Trump says things in Wisconsin are a mess. This is part of it.
So this is going to be an issue for Scott Walker in the campaign trail. It's not going to just end with, you know, Reed Hall leaving and somebody new coming on board.
Okay. You alluded to Barca. Let's listen to his formal remarks. Unfortunately, Hall's tenure was marred by management failures and a failure to protect Wisconsin taxpayers, which was in part due to his inexperience in the economic development field. Is it really unfair to ask a respected healthcare professional who then retires running Marshfield Clinic to come down and take over the state's jobs agency when you have a gun to the head of creating 250,000 private sector jobs?
He could have said no. I mean, that's the flip side. He did tackle it, and so you kind of take the blame for taking the job.
Okay. And then Senator Lassa said, Democratic Senator Lassa, also a member of the board, his retirement presents an opportunity for new WEDIC leadership to forthrightly take on the agency's ongoing problems and to reestablish the confidence of the WEDIC board, the legislature, and the people of Wisconsin. Let's cast it forward. Is this legislature, they already took Governor Walker off the board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wanted to be on that board to do the victory lap once they hit the 250 private sector jobs. But that didn't work out, so he's now off the board. You have some legis on the board. Is there a move to take them off?
There's been talk about that again, about pulling those guys off, which Democrats are crying foul that would take away public oversight, if you will, of what's going on at the agency. So there's that issue that may percolate again this year at some point. But, you know, the issue going forward.
Do you think will anybody want this job?
Excellent question. Because you have a governor now who is, let's say, has his attention elsewhere,
yep,
running for president. You have some turnover in his office with Eric Schutt leaving as chief of staff.
Yes.
They could use somebody strong in that job as WEDIC director to lead it forward and kind of help pick things up. So what's the profile again? Is it a development guy or is it a fixer? Somebody can come in and kind of put out the fires and get them on the right direction. And now Walker's folks will tell you, hey, we've fixed a lot of problems and we are moving forward. This is starting to show results. So let's, you know, give some credit. It's not like it's as bad as it used to be, but there's still persistent problems going on there.
Well, but some of the problems that have been disclosed by auditors and journalists were pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And those emails, the secretary of DOA pushed for a loan, yes, to a maxed out Walker contributor. Boy, how'd you like to be a DOA, WEDIC munchkin and get a call from the secretary of administration? How's it going on that loan to that individual? And then you had continual staff turnover.
Yes.
And then you have people not doing due diligence, checking the financial records on the applicants. Major problems. Do you think the agency has hit bottom?
Oh, you, Walker's people hope so. You know, what is bottom? I mean, is it, if they go a month without a bad headline, is that like a uptick? It's like the market this week, right? I mean, if we hit bottom of the market because we've gone up by 800 points, it's hard to say. They just need a good run of positive press or of no bad press to kind of get out of the cycle of constant churning headlines.
Okay, well, then we don't know who would want this job, correct?
I'm not sure right now, no.
Okay, new subject. General fund tax revenues were announced today. They were announced this week. They generated an extra $71 million. Mm-hmm. Let's look at those figures a little bit. Personal income tax was up 3.7%. Sales tax was up 5.7%. This is year over year.
Mm-hmm.
And corporate tax hit $1 billion for the first time ever. I checked it out. They were up 3.8%. Net 4.3% gain. Pretty respectable, JR?
It's okay. What's interesting is you have to look at this and then kind of take a step back, if you will. Fiscal Bureau in January put out, you know, new estimates that kind of said where we're at right now, and we exceeded those by $71 million.
Yes.
But in May, it came back and said we're not going to do a re-estimate, which they often do in May of a budget year, saying that there may be a bump in this year, but there's uncertainty in the next 2 years going forward that could offset that. So we're in a situation where, yes, this is good news in the short term, but long term, we have a very small margin for error right now in this budget. And if things go south, you know, it could get a little ugly here the next 2 years for lawmakers in the Capitol.
Yeah, other thing strikes me about this is you've used the term wonk. Mm-hmm. Only three taxes, the personal income tax, the corporate income tax, and the sales tax, produced 91% of general fund spending.
Mm-hmm.
Also, can you name another state that its cigarette tax is the fourth highest source of general fund revenue?
Not off the top of my head. Now, there's some politics at play here as well, because conservatives are making the argument of, hey, we cut taxes and it spurred growth, all right? So they're trying to use this as a snapshot of, this is an argument for more cuts.
Right.
But go back to the last year. Remember last August, when we were looking at the numbers for the previous year, we were off by $281 million, even when you factor in the tax cuts they did, because things are kind of, so it's a little bit, you know, part of it is there's some uncertainty in the economy and forecasting these numbers out long term. Part of it is we got a small bump, but it's not time to do a victory dance just yet that we're like out of the woods financially.
Well, that's my next question. Do you think now that we have an additional $71 million that there's going to be a move in the fall session to spend this on some of the causes that had their hand out and didn't get anything?
I don't think Republicans have an appetite to spend more on anything. Now, there will be at times pushes for more tax cuts, but I think I would not be surprised they waited a little while before they really started jumping off the deep end with this stuff, because again, it's a very small cushion. You're talking a $70 billion budget,
yeah,
and they're talking what, a cushion of less than $100 million.
Well, one other way to say that, we got in an extra $71 million. That is 0.4% of total general fund tax collections of $14.51 million. So, at least it wasn't bad news.
Yes,
the other
that's
side
right.
of it is that is
absolutely
okay. Topic three. The governor and his presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
He spent 3 days in Iowa. Mm-hmm. As of yesterday, he was in 25 of Iowa's 99 counties. He's at the Citadel today giving a foreign policy speech.
Actually, as we speak, he's doing it.
As we speak. And they've released some excerpts, mm-hmm, which you guys reported.
Yep.
But in Iowa, he said the president should disinvite the premier of China. He said, if anything, we should be taking them, China, to the woodshed. I don't know how you take China to the woodshed. But anyway, and I'm not intimidated to talk about China. Has the governor had a good week?
It's been an interesting week because you have he's talking tougher, if you will. So the tough talk on China has been met with wait a second, didn't you do a trade mission to China in 2013 and meet with the president and have lots of good things to say about the relations? And oh, by the way, isn't your Wiedek going back to China with a bunch of business executives in January? So where's the disconnect there? There's that issue. There's still the immigration fallout, the stories of the three positions in 1 week, according to some in the media, that he at first seemed to be aligning himself with Trump last week about I'm against birthright citizenship.
Yes.
Then on Friday saying I'm not taking a position on that. We have to first take care of our border and enforce the law on the books. Then on Sunday last week saying I'm not in favor of repealing the 14th Amendment. That issue has bedeviled him for years. If you go back and look, the 2010 race with Mark Newman, the primary, there's the Arizona law at the time was a big. This has been going on for a while of where is Scott Walker at on immigration?
So voters in New Hampshire, Iowa, and South Carolina don't really know.
Well, he's trying to find his foot. It seems like at times the governor has this habit of he brainstorms out loud, if you will.
He does.
In Wisconsin, it's not a big deal because if you're in Eau Claire and then La Crosse and Wausau or Green Bay and say something slightly different, nobody's going to pick up on it. You now have a dedicated group of journalists who are following you constantly, and every nuance is different. They pick up on it and say, well, what's going on? So he seems to be working to get to a point where he's comfortable with what his position is going to be going forward. That becomes an issue in the current 24/7 news cycle that we have.
Yes.
So there's that going on. But now he's at the Citadel. You look at the speech he's going to give. He's going to talk tough on China, talk tough on ISIS. He wants to be the guy who is, again, unintimidated. We're going to be strong as America. We're going to restore this kind of, backbone to our relations. We're going to take on Russia, take on China. He's trying to carve out a niche, if you will, of being a guy who's not going to back down from anybody.
Okay, but I need your help interpreting this because in his speech at the Citadel, they have released some excerpts, mm-hmm. which you've put out. Here's one quote. As president, I will send the following message. The retreat is over. American leadership is back, and together with our allies, we will not surrender another inch of ground to terrorists or any other power that threatens our safety. Okay, and then he went on in the same speech, Islamic terrorists are pure evil. Okay, so that's how he is framing mm-hmm. it right now as we speak at the Citadel. But here's what he said in Iowa yesterday. Help me reconcile this. I don't believe we should be the world's policeman. I don't believe we need to be in nation building and that we need to go around getting in everything and everywhere. Can you be the walker whisperer to me? What's...
Another line in that speech today is going to be about a promise that we're going to only send you guys into battle when there's a clear threat to our national security and a clear objective and a clear plan to win. So he's trying to reach this point of setting the Walker, doctrine, if you will.
Yeah.
And, it takes some nuance, but the bottom line is trying to be, he wants to be I'm a stand-up kind of guy who's going to talk tough on these things, and I'm not going to back down.
Okay, and you and I, we get into the horse race stuff. Mm-hmm. The latest poll by that, I can't pronounce it, Quinnipiac?
Quinnipiac, yep.
Thank you. Trump 28, Carson 12, Bush 7, Cruz 7, Rubio 7, Walker 6. Is this the lowest he's been in some of these?
I think so. A lot of these polls, you're seeing his support erode. Now, here's the question. Scott Walker, historically in Wisconsin, has not been in a position of having to be in the middle of the pack. He's always been in a position of strength in his races. He's was leading Mary Burke and Tom Barrett in almost most of the polls you saw in those races. He had good environments in 2010 and 2014. In 2012, he had a huge financial advantage, which he also had in 12 and, or 10 and 14. He's never been in a position of being the underdog. He's never had to attack. He's always been, if you watch him in debates, he will engage his opponent only to deflect the attack and then pivot to the talking point he wants to lay out there for
yes.
people. What's the Scott Walker going to look like in September 16th, the next debate? Will he be different? Will he be somebody he's been talking about being more passionate, more aggressive? He's going to be go after somebody. Then there's the dilemma of this. In a 17-person field, who do you attack? Who's the front runner? Yes, Trump's at 30%, 28% depending on what poll you look at. But does it pay off to go after anybody? it's kind of an interesting question for Walker of how do you get your footing back, especially with your background of not being really an attack dog in your past campaigns. It's kind of a unique position for him to be in.
All you do at Was Politics is Politics. So I'm going to ask you this national question. Why is Trump Teflon?
That's an excellent question. I ask people all the time about him, and they almost to a person say, at some point it's going to like fade away. At some point it's going to go away. But it hasn't yet.
Yeah.
The questions become now, is he building infrastructure in Iowa? You know, yes, he's popular and got poll numbers, but in Iowa, it's not just about poll numbers. It's about having an infrastructure in place where people will show up on a night in late January, early February, and sit there for 3 hours and not only say, I support this person, but argue with their neighbors about why they should support him as well. Can he do that? Can he build infrastructure in New Hampshire and all these other places? That's kind of the question that people keep asking now because the numbers aren't going away. At some point, they think he's going to make a mistake. It'll be too much.
But he survived. He stepped in it three or four times.
And if you look at who's surging right now, it's Trump, Fiorina, and Carson.
Yeah.
And it's at the expense of people like Walker and Rubio. What you're seeing is a Monmouth poll this week of South Carolina voters. Interesting line in there was that I think 61% of voters, Republican voters in South Carolina, want some or prefer a candidate who's from outside of politics than somebody from D.C. who knows how to get things done as the next nominee. It kind of shows you they want an outsider. Now, Walker has had done a phenomenal job in Wisconsin of having credibility with the Tea Party crowd, anti-establishment folks, and part of that's been because in Milwaukee County, he was a Republican in a Democratic seat, right? Taking on the county board. That was his foil, if you will, dominated by Democrats. Then he got to Madison and took on the unions as governor. So he's had that credibility, but in D.C., in a national race, he doesn't have the same kind of credibility because he's been in politics for 20-some years, almost his entire adult life in public office, but Trump, Fiorina, Carson, they're going, hey, we're not in office. We are outsiders, true outsiders. They have an easier argument to make, if you will, that I can tap into that anti-establishment sentiment and deliver for you in D.C.
I know you try to talk to the people who are as close as possible to Walker on the presidential trail. Do they suggest that he is shaken by, you know, that his debate poor to so-so performance and the polls, his dropping in the polls since then?
They look at it and say, look, he did what he wanted to do in the debate September or August 6th. They that's what they wanted out of him. Don't make a mistake.
Okay.
Don't engage him. Don't risk anything.
Give the time back.
Well, that part,
a minute, maybe
they would like to
only
use
40
time.
Seconds. I understand.
But they're looking at it as a long-term race. I mean, Walker uses this analogy all the time about, you know, the races he ran in high school and
that's
track,
true,
right?
True, yes.
And he's building this infrastructure in various states. He keeps rolling out, you know, campaign co-chairs and all that kind of stuff. So he's looking at this as a long haul, if you will,
okay,
and position himself for that.
Okay. Final subject. Well, actually, two more subjects, but there's an election Tuesday. It's a primary. 99th Assembly District. Is that the most Republican district in the state?
Oh, it's got to be one of the top five, if not the
Waukesha County.
Yes.
Okay. We have four candidates. At Wisconsin, I interviewed him last week. David Westlake told me he started two businesses, but ran for the U.S. Senate in 2010. Told me he led a rally for Walker at the height of the Act 10 protest. Spencer Zimmerman is a young man who thinks all the older politicians have got us too far in debt. Mr. Owens is an insurance executive, has an insurance agency, and says his family's been in politics for three generations. And Cindy Duco has been endorsed by the Realtors, a member of the Town of Delafield Board. Who are the pros saying this is between?
Mostly it's a three-way race with Westlake, Owens, and Duco. But here's the thing. If you think about it, in Capinga's race, Chris Capinga, who this is his old assembly seat now in the state senate, it was what? I think like 9,500 people voted in that race. So we're talking half, a third of that are going to vote in this primary at most.
3,000.
On Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
you could win this with 1,500 votes. It's like, well, who's got the best turnout operation on September 1st, the first day of school in the district, by the way. So you look at it, Westlake, Owens, and Duco have either put their own money in or raised a decent amount of money at this point. They've done mail. Duco's been endorsed by Tommy Thompson. I think Westlake got money from Tim Michaels, ran for U.S. Senate back in 2004 against Russ Feingold. So they're the ones kind of in the mix. Owens, interesting. First one I've seen really attack anybody else in that race. He's been going after Duco about her votes in the town board with taxes.
Right.
So the kind of question becomes, again, who's got the turnout operation? Who can connect with 1,500, 1,700 people
yep.
and turn them out on a Tuesday in September to vote for this? That's the question.
Yeah, I agree. And the winner on Tuesday is the next representative of the 99th.
Barring the most miraculous writing campaign in Wisconsin history.
But the Democrats didn't even field a candidate in this one.
So you'd have to, you know, again, have amazing writing candidacy to beat this person. But yeah, it's all fact. It's Tuesday's at the show for this seat.
Okay, so WisPolitics Stock Report, we're on an off week this week.
A little quiet.
But now
summer.
You were just telling me something that I haven't been following. The GAB is back in the news today.
Yes, the drumbeat against the GAB continues. The Wall Street Journal has been getting leaks from these court cases going on right now. Remember, there's a case in Waukesha County, continued lawsuit against the GAB by people who are targeted. There's also the state Supreme Court, which has been asked to reconsider its decision ending the John Doe. Well, the Wall Street Journal published some emails last night / this morning from Shane Falk, who was the at one point working for the GAB. It seemed to put a partisan tint or a suggests at least he was prodding them to kind of go forward on this John Doe investigation. It has just fueled the fire for Republicans at state capitol right now. They're on Twitter saying, hey, this is a problem.
Yep.
I think Falk referred to voters as sheeple in one of the emails. That's become a hashtag,
Sheeple.
Sheeple.
Wow.
So that is not helping the GAB's cause today. And the issue is they've been talking about forming the GAB for a while. They have not been able to get on board yet on what the board will look like.
Yeah.
There's talk about just going back to a partisan model, the elections board, doing a mix. I mean, it's all over the map. They have not found time yet to reach a deal between the two houses. That's the last impediment. What's this board going to look like?
Well, a week ago, the GAB seemed to have been making some PR gains mm-hmm. when the auditors said that the GAB had been responsive to some of the questions raised by the auditors. Now you have another major PR setback with the help of the Wall Street Journal.
That audit wasn't going to save the GAB. It gave them a breath to make an argument of, hey, we're doing our job. This is just one more nail in the coffin. I mean, we all have the watches going. At some point, they're going to overhaul this agency, revamp it, destroy it, whatever you're going to use.
Yep.
It's a matter of what's it going to look like and when they're going to pull it off. There are other issues percolating this fall. They're going to come back in, 2 to 3 weeks, be on the floor again.
September 15, 16.
So they have a couple weeks in September blocked off, a couple in October.
Yep.
At some point, you would think you see this bill, along with John Doe and campaign
finance. Okay. Well, never stops in the Capitol.
Yeah.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind. Thank you.